This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
Imagine setting up this this invisible state-of-the-art electric fence, right? You want to keep someone out of your property.
Right, yeah.
But then you wake up a few months later and you find out they've built this massive multi-billion dollar empire right on the other side of it.
That is exactly what's happened.
It is wild. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We are incredibly glad you're joining us today.
We really are.
And our mission today is to examine this staggering, just comprehensive intelligence report provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
Yeah, it's a huge document.
It really is. And this report, it details an unbelievably rapid shift happening in the global technology landscape. Specifically, we're looking at China's aggressive, almost chaotic sprint toward total technological self-reliance.
Oh, absolutely.
We are going to explore, you know, artificial intelligence, robotics, semiconductors, and telecommunications.
But, you know, before we really get into the weeds here, we should explicitly state our position as your guides through this material.
Yeah, definitely. That's important.
Because the sources for this deep dive, they cover intense geopolitical friction and, frankly, high-stakes tech rivalries. So we do not take any political sides here.
None at all.
Our only goal is to unpack the fascinating facts, the hard numbers, and the broader global implications contained in this original report.
Yeah, we are just here to follow the data, you know, wherever it leads us.
Exactly. And if there is one overarching theme across all of these documents, it is the dramatic transition from quiet experimentation to massive real-world deployment.
Right.
And this is happening despite or, you know, perhaps entirely because of intense global trade restrictions.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to really understand this shift, we have to start at the foundation of the modern tech race.
The AI models.
The AI models, exactly. And the physical computer chips that power them. The report details this massive cat and mouse game currently playing out.
It's fascinating.
We're looking at Anthropic, the makers of the Claude AI model, actively blocking Chinese firms from accessing their systems.
And the sheer scale of this attempted access is what first jumps out of the data.
Crazy.
Between April and June alone, Anthropic identified roughly 25,000 fraudulent accounts.
Wow.
And these accounts executed an astounding 28.8 million API calls.
28.8 million. But wait, when the report says they were using those calls to, I think it says extract Claude's programming logic.
Yeah.
What does that actually look like in practice?
Well, think of it as using a highly advanced, smarter AI to train a less capable domestic AI.
Okay.
They basically feed Claude millions of complex prompts. They take the incredibly sophisticated answers Claude generates.
Right.
And they use those answers as a textbook to teach their own models how to think and reason.
This is like being told you can't buy steel to build a skyscraper, so you invent a completely new type of super strong carbon fiber and build it anyway.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. And to place those 28 million orders, these entities were routing their connections through VPNs or, you know, setting up corporate accounts through Singapore branches.
It was just to bypass the geographical restrictions.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Anthropic actually had to start monitoring the literal time zones of the connecting computers.
No way.
Yeah, they had to analyze specific, highly automated usage patterns just to identify and block these hidden relay stations.
But the report highlights this this wild, unintended consequence.
Oh, yeah?
All these restrictions and blockades, they're having an inverse effect. It is radically accelerating China's domestic capabilities.
Because they are being forced to build that identical kitchen you just mentioned.
Exactly. The Chinese tech giant Meituan just open-sourced a new AI model called Longcat 2.0. And this thing is a monster.
It really is.
It boasts 1.6 trillion parameters.
And to give that some context for you listening, a parameter is essentially a digital synapse.
Right.
It's the connection point inside the AI's artificial brain that helps it recognize patterns and make decisions. So a trillion parameter model is firmly in the frontier category of artificial intelligence. It's an incredibly complex system.
And here is the crucial detail from the report. Longcat 2.0 was trained entirely on a massive cluster of 50,000 Chinese-made AI ASIC chips.
Not NVIDIA GPUs.
Right. Not NVIDIA. Could you clarify the difference there for anyone, you know, not building supercomputers in their garage?
Sure, yeah. So a standard GPU, which NVIDIA is famous for, is a general purpose powerhouse.
Yep.
It can render a video game, it can mine cryptocurrency, or train an AI. But an ASIC, which stands for Application Specific Integrated Circuit.
Say that three times fast.
Right. Well, an ASIC is custom built from the silicon up to do one specific task and nothing else.
Oh, okay.
By designing custom ASICs solely for AI calculations, Chinese firms are finding ways to bypass the need for restricted general-purpose GPUs.
So they completed the entire process, from pre-training all the way to inference, without relying on American hardware.
What's fascinating here is what former lawmaker Kyung-jin Kim said about this. He provided some very short commentary on this specific point.
What did he say?
He notes that the success of LongCAC 2.0 proves that the foundational premise of U.S. export controls is fundamentally changing.
Oh, wow.
The core assumption driving global policy has been that blocking access to NVIDIA chips will halt China's AI progress.
Right, because they wouldn't have the hardware.
Exactly. But that assumption is now visibly breaking down.
Because they just built their own tools to do the job. And, I mean, this hardware self-reliance isn't just happening with custom AI chips.
No, not at all.
It's happening at the microscopic semiconductor fabrication level. Sangmi, China's top chipmaker, is currently doubling its 7-nanometer wafer production from roughly 20,000 to 45,000 wafers per month.
And even more surprisingly, they are successfully piloting 5-nanometer chips.
Which is incredibly small.
Yeah. And they are doing this using older DUV, that's deep ultraviolet lithography machines.
Instead of the restricted ones, right?
Exactly. Rather than the restricted state-of-the-art EUV machines, which use extreme ultraviolet light.
Wait, I always thought you absolutely needed the newest EUV machines to carve circuit patterns at that incredibly tiny 5-nanometer scale.
Well, you do need them if you want the process to be highly efficient and cost-effective.
Ah, okay.
By using older DUV machines, SMIC is forced to use a technique called multi-patterning. They essentially have to run the same silicon wafer through the machine 3 or 4 separate times to print the required density of circuits.
That sounds incredibly tedious. The report mentions this process is 40 to 50% more expensive than what a company like TSMC spends.
It is a massive markup, yeah.
Why is the financial penalty so steep just for running it through a few extra times?
It comes down to the microscopic mechanics of multi-patterning.
Okay.
Every time you run that wafer through the machine again, the alignment has to be flawless down to the atomic level.
Oh, jeez.
If you were off by a single nanometer on the third pass, the entire chip is dead.
So it just breaks the whole thing.
Yeah, it drastically increases the chance of microscopic errors, which severely lowers the yield of usable chips you get at the end. Plus, you're burning through massive amounts of expensive chemicals and energy for every extra pass.
So they are taking a massive financial hit, eating the cost of wasted materials and lower yields, just to prove the hardware self-reliance strategy can function.
Exactly. The domestic supply chain for advanced semiconductors is operating and expanding entirely regardless of the premium.
So they're solidifying the physical foundation, you know, whatever the cost. Now let's look at the software layer running on top of that foundation because it is moving at breakneck speed.
It really is.
ByteDance is reportedly launching Seedance 2.5, which is capable of generating 30 seconds of continuous, seamless 4K video from a single prompt.
That's insane.
And it processes 50 multimodal references simultaneously. And DeepSeek just released DSpark, an open source framework that speeds up AI inference by up to 85%.
We should probably break down why that 85% number is a game changer.
Yeah, please do.
So inference is how fast the AI actually thinks and generates a response after it has already been trained.
Like when I ask it a question, how fast it types back?
Exactly. If you speed up inference by 85%, it means a company can serve almost double the number of end users simultaneously without having to buy a single new piece of hardware.
Wow.
It is a massive leap in computing efficiency.
But right as they achieve this incredible software efficiency, they are slamming on the regulatory brakes.
Yeah, this part was wild.
China is implementing the world's first strict AI personification regulations on July 15th.
Right.
This new law explicitly bans virtual levels for minors and mandates strict anti-addiction systems.
And as a result, platforms like ByteDance's Doubao and Alibaba's Qwen are completely gutting their agent data.
Gutting it.
Yeah, they are shutting down features and permanently deleting user interaction histories a full 10 days ahead of the deadline.
We always hear about tech companies fighting regulation, but here they are deleting user data before the law even takes effect. Why the rush to comply so early?
Well, these continuous memory AI agents, the ones designed to act like companions and remember your past conversations,
yeah,
they're fundamentally incompatible with these new rules, which mandate immediate shutoff capabilities.
Right, but why not fight it? They lobby, they delay, they look for loopholes usually.
It comes down to the architecture of China's newly completed 3-tier regulatory system.
Okay.
The foundation was laid with the TC260 AI Ethics Guidelines. This system has moved rapidly from voluntary ethical guidelines to binding rules on AI agents, and now to this specific AI personification law.
So it escalated quickly.
Yes. The regulatory hammer in this three-tier system is heavy, and it is immediate. There is no appeals process to delay compliance.
So it sounds like they are prioritizing sheer speed of implementation over everything else, while, you know, other countries are still stuck trying to figure out what a perfect AI law should even look like.
That is the exact insight lawyer Kyungjin Kim highlights in the report.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He points to Korea as an example. He notes that while overarching AI basic laws are being debated there, the actual sub-regulations and enforceable frameworks haven't even taken shape.
So they're just talking.
Right. His point is that debating the optimal shape of a regulation is secondary if you entirely miss the required speed of implementation.
That makes a lot of sense.
By putting hard rules into practice first, the Chinese market is establishing the de facto global reference point for how to regulate AI companions.
Okay, we have domestic chips powering advanced models and strict, fast-moving laws governing how those models interact with humans. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, the physical stuff.
Yes, because an AI brain is limited if it doesn't have a physical body. And this intelligence is being deployed into the physical world at an unprecedented scale.
The leap from software running on a server to physical implementation in the field is happening much faster than many analysts anticipated.
Let's talk about the company Agibot. They just rolled their 15,000th embodied intelligence robot off the production line. To put that scale in perspective for you, they had just 1,000 units back in January.
That's a massive jump.
They've gone from 1,000 to 15,000 in months, and they've confirmed an annual production capacity of 100,000 units. But it's where these robots are going that blows my mind.
Right, the power grid.
China's State Grid, the state-owned electric utility, is deploying 8,500 robots this year alone.
And the breakdown of that deployment is fascinating. We're talking about 5,000 quadruped robot dogs.
Robot dogs.
Negative 3,000 dual arm wheeled robots and 500 humanoid robots.
Oh.
They are being sent out into high voltage environments and remote mountainous terrains to inspect power lines.
That sounds like a sci-fi movie.
And they are backing this initiative with a budget of 6.8 billion yuan, which is roughly 1 billion US dollars.
And it's not just the energy grid. The company UB Tech has their Walker S2 humanoid robot actively deployed at the China-Vietnam border right now.
Doing customs work.
Yeah. It is doing 247 customs inspections, scanning bags, and translating for travelers. Their report mentions this is a grueling test for sensor fusion. What does that actually mean in a border context?
Sensor fusion is the robot's ability to take in data from multiple different sources. So like optical cameras, LiDAR lasers, thermal imaging, and audio microphones.
All at once.
Yeah, and stitch all that information together in real time to understand its environment.
Got it.
At a border crossing, you have high humidity, constant dust blowing around, and massive, unpredictable crowds of people. Blending all those sensors flawlessly is the only way the robot doesn't get confused and freeze up.
Deploying 8,500 robots to a power grid sounds like a massive PR stunt. How do we know this isn't just a pilot program for the cameras? Like, you get a few high-definition videos of a robot dog climbing a mountain while human workers continue doing the actual heavy lifting behind the scenes.
Well, former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim directly addresses that skepticism in his analysis, and he emphatically shuts down the idea of a PR stunt.
Really? Oh.
His reasoning is tied directly to the capital involved. You do not allocate a 6.8 billion yuan budget, a billion U.S. dollars for a photo op.
I guess that's true.
That level of funding dictates full-scale operational deployment.
$1 billion buys a lot more than a promotional video.
Exactly. And the macro implications here are profound. Think about the global infrastructure export market.
Okay.
When countries in Southeast Asia or the Middle East look to modernize their power grids in 5 years, they will need automated inspection systems.
Right.
By establishing these robots as the operational standard in extreme real-world environments right now, China will have the only proven, battle-tested, scaled, and integrated robotic fleet ready to export.
But building 50,000 chip clusters for AI training and fleets of 8,500 mountain-climbing robots requires an absolute ocean of raw materials and physical components.
Oh, yeah. The logistics are mind-boggling.
And this massive demand is creating literal tremors in the global markets.
We are watching a very unique economic paradox unfold. It's a complete split between the psychology of the financial markets and the hard reality of the physical supply chain.
Okay, let's look at the financial side first. On July 2nd, the South Korean stock market, the KOSPI, experienced a massive crash.
Huge drop.
Tech giants Samsung and SK Hynix plummeted. SK Hynix dropped over 14% and Samsung fell over 9%.
In a single day.
In a single day, $290 billion in combined market capitalization was wiped out. When you see your own tech stocks take a sudden dive or you wonder why the cost of your next smartphone might jump, this is the hidden machinery causing it.
And the trigger for that $290 billion wipeout reveals just how fragile investor sentiment is.
What caused it?
The crash was sparked by a single report that Meta, Mark Zuckerberg's company, was selling some of its excess AI compute capacity to cloud providers.
That one rumor sparked a global panic on Wall Street. Investors suddenly worried that the massive, supposedly unlimited spending on AI infrastructure might be slowing down. The fear of an AI bubble popping is what tanked the semiconductor stocks.
Because Wall Street is trading on psychology, anxiety, and future projections. They fear the theoretical end of the AI gold rush.
But paradoxically, on the ground, in the actual physical supply chains, component prices are absolutely skyrocketing.
Oh, yeah.
Take MLCCs.
Multi-layer ceramic capacitors.
Right.
They are often referred to as the rice of the electronics industry.
The rice.
Yeah, because they're everywhere. They are tiny, essential components that regulate electrical current and store energy.
Yeah.
And a single high-end AI server requires thousands of them to function safely without short-circuiting.
Murata, a major supplier, just raised their prices for these advanced MLCCs by 10 to 40%.
That's a big jump.
In the Huaikangbai electronics market in Shenzhen, which is basically ground zero for global hardware, the spot prices for these capacitors are updating every 30 minutes.
It's crazy.
Demand is so ferocious that standard delivery times have stretched from 4 weeks to 20 weeks.
Unbelievable.
Wait, so Wall Street is panicking that AI investment is slowing down, but in the actual electronics markets in Shenzhen, prices are rising every half hour because they can't make parts fast enough. Help me make sense of this disconnect.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is where you see the collision between fragile investor psychology and unyielding physical reality.
Okay, explain that.
The financial world is worried the demand isn't real or won't last. But the physical supply chain is still buckling under the massive demand required to build the data centers and the 100,000 robots a year we just discussed.
Right. The robots need physical parts.
Exactly. You can't build an embodied AI robot with a positive earnings report. You need physical capacitors.
Yeah.
The physical build-out is constrained by raw materials and factory capacity. And that reality does not care about a rumor on Wall Street.
And this race for raw materials and components isn't just about building more robots today. It's about securing the hardware needed to dominate the next invisible battleground. The networks these machines will use to communicate. We are still getting used to 5G on our phones, but the geopolitical battle for 6G is already raging.
The report highlights that China Telecom has unveiled an AI-native 6G architecture.
Wow.
And they currently boast a dominant 40.3% share of all global 6G core patents.
What does an AI-native 6G architecture actually mean for the end user? Like, how is it different from the network I use right now?
Well, currently your phone sends data through the air to a cell tower, which sends it to a massive server farm to be processed by an AI, and then the answer comes all the way back.
Right, that's how it works now.
An AI-native architecture means computing power and artificial intelligence are orchestrated directly into the fabric of the telecommunication system itself.
Into the system itself.
Yeah, the network doesn't just transmit data. The airwaves themselves are intelligent. Holding over 40% of the patents means they are fundamentally writing the blueprint for how the entire world will communicate in the 2030s.
Meanwhile, the geopolitical trade war continues to escalate alongside this patent race. China's Ministry of Commerce just added 10 U.S. companies to their export control list, effectively banning the export of dual-use items immediately.
And dual-use items refer to critical technologies, software, or raw materials that have both civilian and military applications.
Got it.
Banning these exports is a severe mechanism of control.
Notably, this ban included the critical mineral firm MP Materials. So what does this mean? If you're listening to this right now, how should you contextualize this back and forth volley of export bans and billion-dollar robot fleets and 6G patent races?
Lawyer King Jin Kim offers a profound insight here.
What's that?
We're no longer just looking at a traditional trade dispute or a standard tariff war. This is a structural decoupling.
A structural decoupling.
Yes, because of the export bans on critical minerals and chips, because of the diverging regulations on AI ethics, and because of the race to dominate next-generation hardware, we are watching the real-time creation of two entirely separate, highly advanced technological ecosystems. A Western ecosystem and an Eastern ecosystem being built from the silicon up on entirely different foundations.
Let's bring this all together. We started by looking at how Anthropic's blockades of Claude were intended to slow down progress, but instead functioned as a catalyst, driving Chinese firms to reverse engineer AI logic and train massive models entirely on domestic custom chips.
Right.
We saw how strict new domestic ethics regulations are forcing a rapid pivot in software architecture, far outpacing the legislative speed of other nations.
Much faster.
We saw how that software is being pushed into the physical world, with massive robot armies inspecting power lines using advanced sensor fusion, completely unfazed by the wild, volatile swings of the global semiconductor stock market.
Yeah.
And we saw how the battle for raw components is fueling the race to build the AI-native 6G networks of the future.
It is a remarkable picture of forced resilience and rapid adaptation.
It really is.
But this raises an important question, perhaps the most critical one of all to consider as we wrap up. We've talked deeply about this push for hardware self-reliance and the deployment of AI in physical robots.
Right.
As AI models become highly localized, meaning they are trained exclusively on domestic hardware, they are governed by vastly different domestic ethics laws, and they will soon be deployed in isolated proprietary 6G networks. Will we eventually reach a point where Western AI and Eastern AI can no longer even communicate or understand each other's underlying logic?
Oh, wow.
If the fundamental architectures and the ethical constraints of these systems are built in total isolation from one another, what happens to the global internet and global trade when the artificial minds managing it are fundamentally alien to one another?
Now, that is a thought that is going to stick with me.
Me too.
The picture of a unified global tech future is fracturing, and we might soon see a world where the infrastructure on one side of the globe literally cannot comprehend the infrastructure on the other. Thank you all so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the rapid changes in the world around you, because as we saw today, the future is arriving a lot faster than anyone predicted. Catch you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.